Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Got a lot of breaking updates for you. Things are moving so fast these days that by the very second I record this, this could be out of date, but I think it's going to be really important just to talk through a lot of the things going on in student loan land right now. We're coming up on some of the final podcast episodes before payments actually restart again and interest restarts again. So this is going to be really intense. We're already hearing of super long wait times to contact servicers for a lot of reasons we'll talk about today in the show. I would just preach patience all around. What we are all living through right now is the sort of pandemic era equivalent of when you wanted to go rent a room in a high-end luxury hotel in the mountains during COVID, and like there was like not enough staff, and the price, it was overrun with demand, and like the prices being charged weren't reflective of all the inflation and the economy kind of thing. I mean, that's what the student loan world is going through right now. We're going through that. Servicers are going through that. Everyone is. So I would just say in a world like this, you've got to know the hacks. You've got to know things to do. You've got to know the loopholes, and just we're going to do everything in our power to try to help you save money during this really intense, pretty stressful time. So I want to start out talking about a couple lawsuits that have been filed and just implications for that for borrowers just to be aware of. And I'm not going to give away more than I need to talking about this because I also don't necessarily want to give ideas out there given the things, the stakes that are at play here. So there's been a couple lawsuits filed by some conservative groups against basically everything President Biden is doing on student loans, particularly against the IDR account adjustment. And this, you know, is interesting because the same group's also fighting the authority about being able to continue the student loan pause as well to try to block that from a future president from using it. So this group is suing on basically everything. Now, the key thing that differentiated, you know, the student loan cancellation lawsuits from, you know, some of these other ones is the fact that, you know, states in particular were trying to file, and like there was lots of like state attorneys general involved. It wasn't just some sort of, you know, JV team trying to sue. If you'll recall, in the cancellation lawsuit, there were some lawsuits funded by conservative groups, and they sued on behalf of like two individual borrowers. And this lawsuit was thrown out unanimously by the Supreme Court because they found that the suit had a lack of standing in the parties involved. So I think these particular lawsuits are not something to worry about. So let me just talk about what we would be worried about and why you need to be aware of everything going on, and maybe you need to take action. So if you have any FFEL commercially held debt, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. If you have debt from before 2010 that is owned by, you know, a student loan trust, right? Like a Navient Navient, I guess. And, you know, Nelnet has a lot of these. If your interest payments and interest were not paused during the pandemic on these loans, you need to consolidate those immediately, probably with your other debt. And if you don't, you know, they could cut this off at any point. So that's a little bit scary. I'm not going to go into details as to why I think that, but I think that if you have, you know, this type of debt, this is something that you need to move on very quickly, or else you could risk not getting credit, you know, on those loans after a consolidation. This is a little bit to me like the tax bomb, because if you say that a court did block the IDR account adjustment, you know, this is not something like cancellation where it's easy to hit the pause button. And I'll explain why, right? So you had the cancellation. It was very clearly going to cost a lot of money, and a court put a nationwide injunction on it. And this is something that was not already like in process and done. Sure, millions of people applied for it, don't get me wrong, but this was not like a bunch of people had already had their debt discharged and they'd already taken like irreversible action in anticipation of getting these loans canceled per se. Whereas the IDR account adjustment, I mean, if you think about that, a lot of people have wiped out their IDR credit completely by consolidating. Now, under the IDR account adjustment, that credit all gets carried forward to their new consolidation loan. But say a court did block the IDR account adjustment, you'd have millions of student loan borrowers that would have, you know, no payment counts on their new consolidated loan. Also, there's been like $40 billion of debt that's been discharged through the PSLF waiver, which is a subset of the IDR account adjustment. And there's a lot of question marks as to if you would need to reinstate all that $40 billion of forgiven debt. I don't want to panic anybody on today's, you know, podcast. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it can happen logistically. Department of Education does not have a lot of money. They're broke. They are not getting, you know, approvals for increases in their budget requests. So them being able to sort through a giant mess of a court blocking the IDR account adjustment would be a real disaster. So the reason why I think it would be like the tax bomb situation is, say, in a worst case scenario world where the IDR account adjustment was thrown out by a court, what you'd probably have to have is some kind of congressional law that would try to resolve as to what should happen after that. Because you'd have all these people who took all this action based off of what the Biden administration said to do, and borrowers would be very angry, and they would, you know, take that out by contacting Congress people or representatives. And, you know, I do think that there would be some kind of law that would look like the IDR account adjustment that would have to get passed if something like that happened, just because of logistics. It's also true that, you know, there's not good record keeping for what people's forgiveness count should be in the past. And this IDR account adjustment, one of the big benefits from an operational perspective is it gets people standardized more so on like when their forgiveness date should be. So Department of Ed is working on trying to get that data up on the site to show what people's forgiveness dates should be. And, you know, some sort of like order to block the IDR account adjustment could really throw that all into a tailspin too. So I want to be clear, like before the IDR account adjustment, you know, most people, we would tell people with FFELP loans to consolidate anyway, even though they weren't going to get any credit on their new consolidation loan, right? So we would encourage that because, you know, what matters mostly is the low payments you can get. Like even if you didn't have any credit on a new consolidation loan, in most cases, just the low payments you'll get are worth consolidating over, right? There's a lot of operational administrative benefits to having a consolidation loan. Instead of having like 20 pages on a statement, you're going to have, you know, a couple pages, which is helpful. And again, I want to emphasize that these are fringe lawsuits at the moment. I'm not expecting anything to come of this, but, you know, there is risk in student loan world, right? The only thing guaranteed is death and taxes, and everything else is a gray area. We stand behind our advice. We think that this is fine. We do not think this is going to cause issues. But it is also interesting, too, that one thing that's a little frustrating about this whole process for us is to look at this and say, well, Biden announced this in April of 2022, and lawsuits are just now coming out. Like, are people, like, dumb? I mean, to be fair, you know, the final rules were not published necessarily yet on a lot of this stuff, but the Biden administration has announced this publicly for a very long time. And I also think that's another reason why this might be a little bit more safe than the cancellation. As you saw the cancellation get announced in August, there was immediate lawsuits filed. And this is a little bit like a lawsuits filed way after the fact. So it's something that I felt like we needed to cover just so people are aware in case you see some sort of news article about this and you get scared, oh shoot, should I have not consolidated? No, I think you have to. I think you have to take whatever is being announced by the administration and act on it. Like if you look in the past, people that don't act on the stuff that's been announced promptly are the ones that get left behind. You know, if you look at things like the PSLF waiver, people who acted on it, are a lot of them have their debt discharged already. Things like consolidating for the cancellation. Now, the court ended up blocking it for everyone, but the Biden administration reacted to legal challenges by blocking the cancellation benefit for anybody with FFELP loans that didn't consolidate before a certain date, right? You know, a lot of the new income-driven repayment plans are only available to people who have the right kind of loans, direct loans, right? So I think that you do have to just take action and you respond to whatever the rules are and make a decision with imperfect information because that's all you can do. Again, I do not think that this is going to affect most people and I don't think these lawsuits are going to succeed, but we just want to cover it, just make you aware. Now, let's talk about something that is more relevant, I think, besides these lawsuits. It's going to be the September status of your loans. So this is an example of just the Biden administration just trying to help borrowers, but probably by trying to help them in this case, it's just creating more confusion and pain. So the law that Congress wrote for the compromise over the debt ceiling limit specifically said that the loan pause had to end by law 60 days after June 30th. So that means the student loan pause had to end August 31st. So then Biden administration comes out and says, well, we're going to have the first payment be due in October 1st, and we're going to start interest September 1. Well, like, that's nice, except that's not what the law says. The law says that the pause will end, payments will be due 60 days after June 30th. So we're all sort of looked at that law when it passed, and we're sort of like, how are they doing October 1st? Well, you know, it's magic wand time for everything else, so maybe it's fine, right? But it seems like what they're going to do to comply with the law is to put everyone into an administrative forbearance for the month of September. So unless they're going to claim some sort of special authority, which I'm not sure that they will, that means that September payment, the paused September payment, probably will not count towards forgiveness. You also won't get interest subsidies, but if you have the save plan or the repay plan, you're in line to get interest subsidies. You could also benefit from interest subsidies if a payment was started in September instead of October 1. So what we're going to suggest is that if you have a very low payment, I would not do this if your payment is quite high because, you know, might as well put it off a little bit, right? But if you have one of these payments that was, you know, a few hundred dollars from, you know, residency or a past lower income, or when you were a recent graduate, you just finished law school and you certified at a low income, something like that. If your required payment on your loan history shows a low few hundred dollar or lower number, then you might request to be removed from the administrative forbearance and make payments in September instead of October 1. So the way you would do that is to contact your loan servicer. You could give them a call or you could send them a message. I would probably first send them a message or use like an email or a chat feature on their site and ask this. Just simply say, I would like to be removed from the administrative forbearance in September, and I would like to have my payment deducted from my account as scheduled. So that's what I would do. And again, remember what I said about having to make decisions with imperfect information without guarantees about the way the world's going to be? This is one of those scenarios. Could the Biden administration claim that this administrative forbearance counts somehow for PSLF and IDR? Yeah, they might come out after the fact and say that, but there's no guarantees there. And that's why I'm saying if your payment's a few hundred dollars, you know, it's not a game changer, right? But if it's a few hundred dollar payment that might save you a couple thousand dollar payment later, might as well do that. If you could get interest subsidies for the month of September because you're on the save or the repay plan, you might as well do that. So this is a very difficult situation because what they're telling people is, oh, go contact your loan servicer, right? And meanwhile, because everything is so combative with the two parties over Department of Ed and how politicized everything is, the Department of Ed's not being adequately funded, the servicer contracts are not being adequately funded, the servicers have sort of been used as punching bags, really, at times, you know, sometimes legitimately and sometimes, you know, a little unfairly, I think. And so the servicers don't have enough staff because they're getting paid based off the government's contracts about what they will pay. And the servicers need to, for-profit ones at least, are going to look to make some amount of profit margin to be able to offer the service, right? So what's happened is, you know, really a lot of servicers like Nelnet, for example, have significantly cut back on their call center hours and cut back on their call center staff. And this is directly because of how many false starts and stops there have been with repayment. I mean, this is something where I would probably really place a little bit more blame on the administration, because if you've told people this is the third final student loan pause ending, and the only reason why this one's actually final is because they put it into law, I fully expect the Biden administration would have extended this current pause if they weren't forced to by the Republicans in that debt ceiling bill, right? Now, again, would have been good for borrowers if this pause got extended. But the problem is there's downstream consequences to anything in life, right? So the downstream consequence in this case is the loan servicers are really understaffed. And if you need to ask to have your loan removed from an administrative forbearance, it's very possible that they won't end up doing that. They'll forget, or they won't code it right, or they just won't be able to process the request. And meanwhile, you know, you didn't make that payment, you know? So it's not something that I would stress about. This is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, I'll give you an example from personal life, like flights delayed. Technically, your credit card company is supposed to provide you some reimbursement. I've been through this before, right? Had to stay in a hotel overnight because of the travel delays that are supposed to be covered. And then perhaps intentionally, the credit card company makes it such a nightmare to file a claim and to prove the claim and to document it with just reams of information that have to be provided to get your $300 of compensation, that unless you just like are glutton for punishment, then it's just not worth it. Right. Or unless, you know, your hourly wage is very, very low, or just, you know, you're not making a lot of money yet, like where it makes sense to fight over that $300 for a long time, then, you know, it might not make sense to fight over it. Right. So I would just also suggest to not give yourself unnecessary stress. Are some of these opportunities on the student loans like worth it? Like some opportunities are very much worth it, right? Like filing separately for taxes if you need to, consolidating if you need to based off of what the regulations say, getting onto certain income-based plans if you need to, right? That stuff might be worth it. The stuff that's maybe not worth it is some of these like strategies around the edges where you could try it and you might as well if it's just a quick email. But if you're going to have to wait on a call for like 2 hours, I don't know, like maybe you can play your favorite video game or you can watch your favorite like home renovation show or something and put on that, you know, that call thing in the background. But if it's causing too much stress, just don't worry about it. It's not worth it. Let me tell you about one positive thing that's going on that I think is worth looking into. So if you are a physician, specifically in California, Texas, Ohio, Iowa, or Colorado, so let me say those states again, just in case I blanked on one. So California, Texas, Ohio, Iowa, and Colorado. So those five states have some level of ban on direct employment of physicians by hospital systems. So what that means is there's some new PSLF regulations that specifically say if you're banned by state law from working as a W-2 employee at a 501c3, you know, hospital, that you can get qualified for PSLF. What the big question mark is what is applicable state law? So what we're looking for and what we're seeing is this is primarily only applying to physicians. So that's one observation. Basically, there's a couple weird laws out there from these handful of states that basically make it hard for some hospitals to hire physicians as direct employees of their nonprofit hospitals. So where this really heavily applies is Kaiser Permanente in California. I mean, this, I think, is really what drove this new regulation to be passed. You know, how did this happen? Based off of us tracking all of the comments on the web and just like kind of tracking like who had what public statements first on this. So the very first group that said that this was going to be a retroactive rule where you could retroactively get credit for these types of employers was the California Hospital Association. The other group that announced this really early too was, I think, the California Medical Association. So if you think about that group, so effectively, you know, think about like how government works, right? Like the loudest voices in the room a lot of times get like favorable regulations, particularly if the regulations are kind of narrow, don't affect a lot of people, but would save a narrow population a ton of money. And also if this, you know, group is sort of a group that would maybe have political power within a certain administration, right? So I guess just my guess is, as to what happened is, you know, obviously California is the biggest blue state and, you know, probably some key interest groups from that state probably contacted the administration, Department of Ed, and really heavily lobbied for inclusion in these new PSLF rules. And the cool thing about these rules is like sometimes these can benefit other people that they weren't necessarily created for, right? So in California and Texas specifically, you know, there's a very specific state law that like stops physicians from being employed directly by 501c3 hospitals unless you're working at like a university-based hospital. So for example, in the past, it would only be like UCLA and USC UCSF physicians that could qualify for PSLF or like VA physicians in California. But what this does is it says, well, since like 501c3, like Kaiser cannot employ physicians directly because they're not like a university hospital, because that's a state law, then all those physicians can now apply for PSLF and get it. And so the key thing is to apply retroactively because of the IDR account adjustment going on. So if you have any credit since 2007 that might qualify, you might want to consolidate and then also at the same time apply at studentaid.gov/PSLF. And what you need to do is use the employer identification number of, in the California example, Kaiser Foundation Hospitals instead of the private medical physician group that where you work. You just need to get somebody, either the hospital or your medical group, to sign off that this is authorized and just throw your hat in the ring and see what happens. I mean, this is another situation where we don't have perfect information, but we know people need to be doing this if they could potentially qualify. Now, what we're really interested in is, are there a lot of other groups that could qualify specifically in like Texas, Colorado, Iowa, and Ohio? So if you're a physician in one of those states, what I would suggest is that, you know, you look around and you see, are other physicians in my specialty able to work at like 501c3s where hospitals where I work? That's kind of like a test. So for example, I think that this is more of an opportunity in places like Texas, you know, because that's very explicit. Now for like Iowa, Colorado, and Ohio, I think it might be more like specialty specific. So for example, some specialties are allowed to be 501c3 employees. Some specialties seemingly are not allowed to be 501c3 employees. Another thing to consider too, we're also trying to think about like, could certain physician groups that are not 501c3 employees, like outside of those five states that work for a hospital system that's headquartered in a place like California. So specifically, you know, Kaiser nationwide has physician employees. So maybe if you're like in the Northwest or the Mid-Atlantic and you work for a private physician group, but you're working for one of these like, you know, systems that's headquartered in like California or Texas or something like that, like a Kaiser, then also there's a chance that maybe you could qualify for PSLF. So we're really heavily investigating this. So if you think that there's a chance that you might qualify based off of me talking about this, if you could contact Brittany at studentloanplanner.com, that's Brittney at studentloanplanner.com. She's kind of coordinating our outreach efforts to hospitals around this potential opportunity. We really want to help like hospital systems and physician groups like investigate this further and possibly do some webinars for folks to try to, you know, see if we couldn't get really, you know, what would be life-changing forgiveness out of this. If you think about 10-year PSLF versus 20-year pay forgiveness, you know, you're shaving off 10 years of payments at an attending level, which is usually tens of thousands of dollars a year that you don't have to pay. So this really would be pretty amazing if this will work out. And, you know, clearly with most things in Department of Ed world, you got to throw your hat in the ring and just see what happens because that's what is incentivized. So there's lots of this stuff going on with not just new PSLF rules, administrative forbearances, lawsuits. There's also just the giant, like, expiring IDR account adjustment at the end of this year. Like, you know, say everything goes as expected, it's going to be a little bit of a train wreck. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be trying to consolidate at the last second to get these benefits. There's especially after, like, you start seeing press releases of people actually getting the forgiveness on their loans, a lot of people will come out of the woodwork and realize, oh my gosh, maybe I could qualify for this, right? So I would just suggest that even though our booking calendar doesn't show a ton of availability at times, to still go on there and just get a plan scheduled as soon as you possibly can. So if you need it. So studentloanplanner.com/book. So that's the place to go to schedule either a new consult or an existing client consult if you need a refresh on your plan. Again, if you're not seeing great availability, I would just check back every week because we're constantly trying to update meeting slots to get sooner meeting slots to try to accommodate really as many people as possible. And this is really directly because of all these opportunities all at once that are happening, right? IDR account adjustment, new plan, you don't want to certify early because you could lose your payment. You might take advantage of the payment on-ramp, the 12 months forbearance that you can do and not make payments, you know, just in case your payment would be way lower once you're able to get in a married filing separate tax return or something like that. So I would say the amount of money we're saving people on average is really pretty enormous. And for a few $100, like worst case scenario, just kind of get your plan confirmed or get a refresh and everything's going fine. That's probably what you want to hear, right? But more likely than not, we're probably going to find something that's going to pay for the consult 50 to 100 times over is what we're really finding in a lot of cases. So studentloanplanner.com/book if you want to schedule something. Also, we want to continue getting your questions and just stress pain points that you're experiencing or even just things you're going through as you have payments start again. So if you wanted to leave a voicemail for the pod, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. Type that into your browser, press the record button on your phone. You can read out some of the things that you're going through or questions you have. We'll try to feature some of them on an upcoming pod episode. I'm Travis with Student Loan Planner. Thank you for listening to today's show.